You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramilla, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. The Miami Heat are facing elimination in the NBA Finals, down 3-1 to the Los Angeles Lakers. But while we wait for Game 5 on Friday, here to talk about Jimmy Butler, the Heat, and their matchup with the Lakers is NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports, Sirit Sohi. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Hanging in there. I know this is kind of awkward because we've been talking for about 10 minutes before actually recording here, but it's been a very strange situation to kind of examine the finals in the lens of coronavirus and everything else. You and I haven't actually spoken aside from via text in quite some time. I keep thinking that you've been on the show more than a few times, but the reality is you actually only came on to talk about Dion Waiters. That seems like an eternity ago.
Really? I thought... That's why I had actually thought that I'd been on a couple of times. I think probably because we've tried to set things up before. I thought we talked about Wade a couple years ago.
Well, even then, I guess maybe you're right. That was a couple of years ago. It just feels like you keep writing about Jimmy and the Heat and things that intersect with this podcast. And it just feels like a natural fit to bring you on here. And then somehow it always just falls short. But no, here you are. You wrote a fantastic piece recently called Jimmy Butler Learned to Be a Playmaker, But Now the Heat Need Him to Be a Superstar. That published actually before Game 4 and following his Game 4 performance. That was actually a really hot topic on Heat Twitter, no pun intended. So I'm curious, you know, how you viewed his performance there, because it's been very, I think, inconsistently viewed by Heat fans, but also somewhat critically and unfairly so.
Okay. Well, what are the two sides of the Heat fan perspective?
Well, they're saying that he needs to be more aggressive. I think a lot of inappropriately so, I think, unfairly, again, weight mm-hmm. was put on that late three that he took that rimmed out and then wound up leading to a Lakers three on the other end. So that was a 6-point swing late in the game. And obviously that's not Jimmy's forte. And so people are criticizing him for his shot selection, but also just the fact that he took, you know, less shots than he took in Game 3 when it was a historically aggressive and great performance from him.
Yeah, I think there's a middle ground to be found there for sure. That three was definitely, I was talking to myself during the game, and when Jimmy missed that three, like, I think it was KCP that hit it, and I think, like, you could see what was going to happen for a while, and I just, like, mouthed to myself, oh, that's a TSN turning point right there, and it kind of ended up being that, but I think there is something to him being more aggressive. I think if you look at the start of Game 4, he did a really good job of taking it at Dwight when they tried to, you know, they put AD on him, and then the Heat started just, you know, switching him onto Dwight. And when they did that, I think, you know, he drove on him a couple times, and it just became clear that Jimmy was just, like, too fast for that matchup going downhill. Yeah. And they had to take him out of the game. And I think that's kind of the game that I think Jimmy needs to play, where it's like, okay, like, I know that the mid-range shot isn't a great shot in, like, the long span of, you know, regular season basketball when you have 82 games, but Jimmy's a good mid-range shooter, and it's an open shot, and it's the NBA Finals. It's only one game. It doesn't really matter if it's, like, the most efficient shot in the world, right? So I think the one thing he definitely could have done is, like, on those – when AD started just guarding him straight up and they stopped – like, I think the Lakers also did a better job down the line of not letting AD – letting the guy that set picks for AD, letting that opponent switch onto him, whether it was like Kuzma, mm-hmm. or I think they basically, like, I don't think he got one possession on KCP now that I think about it. And that was a big one in Game 3. So the Lakers did a good job of, like, controlling that matchup, I think. But there were moments where I thought that, you know, Jimmy did have, like, a 15 footer he could have taken, or like a 19 footer, and he didn't. And I think, you know, you hit three or four of those, and it's like, which he is more than capable of doing. That's a shot, right? Like, I think you do that, then you kind of force maybe the next adjustment, the next one, right? And there's a number of things that go into that we can get into. So I do think there is some credence to that. But I don't know that, like, on a whole, I would criticize his shot selection, because he generally does have good shot selection. If anything, it's like, I think he does need to shoot more at times. Mm-hmm. And I think all of this is, like, learning experience too, right? When Jimmy didn't go to the in-between game and he drove on AD, obviously, like the biggest one being when he was blocked at the end of the game. There's also a few where he kind of tried to bank in like these leaning type of layup, half floater things, which he can, like,
right.
But you know, it's a tougher predicament against AD, who can keep up with him. Like, I think in those situations, if he was to pull back and just take those in between shots, which I actually think he did a better job of doing in game three as well, he would have probably had a better game. But I think, you know, it's part of that is like him sussing it out, being like, can I take AD to the rim? And I think he's learned probably that maybe he's learned that he can. I don't know. Maybe they went to the tape and it's going to be like, you know, like he just realizes his first step needs to be a little bit quicker and he can get there. I doubt that, just given how, you know, big and fast AD is. But that's just, you know, I imagine that they will come in and that will probably look different. So I think it's, you know, I think it's a little bit of both. I don't love the idea of just, you know, criticizing him for not putting up all the shots in the world. I just don't think that's how basketball works. But at the same time, like, you know, to go back to the piece that I wrote, like Spo, I didn't quote too many other players in the article, but you know, every one of his teammates was literally just like, yeah, that's what we expect of him. And this is a guy that we think he can be. And like, we don't really care that he doesn't love being a ball hog and stuff like that. Like, that's essentially what we need. I think part of that changed because of the way the Lakers switched the matchups up. But yeah, like he's the best scorer on the team, you know? And I think he just
kind of the easiest scorer, right? I mean, best is debatable, I guess, because considering Hero has, I think, a more versatile offensive game, but the buckets seem to come easier for Jimmy, or at least more efficiently. That's for sure. Like, I mean, look at his game three performance, no three pointers attempted, a whole bunch of free throws, obviously, but his mid-range game was on point. And it's just, I feel like it's such an interesting balance with Jimmy because he's such a great playmaker. And that was my point after game four, is that, look, maybe you wanted him to be more aggressive, but the reality is he was also making plays for others. He was trying to get Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero, and even to a lesser extent, Kendrick Nunn. I mean, you look at the number of missed shot opportunities from Nunn and Kelly Olynyk and even Hero to a certain extent. And it's just, if they had capitalized on a couple more of those, just to their season averages, probably off of feeds from Jimmy, nobody would be criticizing his shot selection or his lack of aggression. So I don't know. I it's such a hard time for me because I feel like Jimmy is such a great player who can make so much of the plays for others so easy. And yet at the same time, he walks this fine line between the game three performance and what could have been a great game four performance if he had just gotten a little bit more support from some of his teammates.
Yeah. I definitely think you're right. I think there's a little bit of both there. Especially, you know, some of the shots that Hero didn't make. He set up Kendrick Nunn a couple times, and Nunn actually ended up, like, he played a much better game than I thought anybody could expect of him. But
game four was pretty bad. 2 of 11, if I recall correctly.
Really? I think it was the first time I saw him hit a shot in so long that I was like, oh yeah, Kendrick Nunn is, I mean, I don't think he had a good game. Don't get me wrong. What's his best game been? I guess I should ask
in the playoffs? None.
That's the thing. Hey, no pun intended. I think that's probably why. I think, like, I saw him hit the three early and I was like, oh, I haven't seen that from him in a while. But
2 of 6 from 3-point range, 2 of 11 from the field. And that's just, like, let me tell you, if you thought they were ripping on Jimmy on Heat Twitter, Kendrick Nunn, like, I mean, he is persona non grata here in South Florida. That is just the whole, and let me tell you, the whole thing about him having COVID and it took him out of the game and he lost his starting job, that ain't it. It's not about that. He lost his starting job because he's been, quite frankly, pretty bad and ineffective for a long time, and Goran was the better option, which is why he's starting. It had nothing to do with him lacking any kind of physicality or you know, being exhausted prematurely because of the COVID-19 or anything like that. So it's funny how that's been constantly referred to on television broadcasts during the seeding games and during the early rounds of the playoffs. Like, why isn't Kendrick Nunn playing? Because he's not particularly good. Like, anything that he was doing well throughout the regular season, unfortunately, has not been there in Orlando.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I follow the Raptors pretty closely, and Siakam had a pretty brutal series against the Celtics. And, you know, I wonder if for some of these guys where they develop skills newly, if those skills then atrophy a little bit quicker because of, you know, just the time away from basketball. That, because I wonder if that is part of what happened to Nunn. But you're right, like, he's been lost, and it's not like he's like the world's best defender ever, but you know, it's just like, while watching him on some of these possessions, it's just like, you're not really, he just doesn't seem focused a lot of the times. And he seems like, I don't know, I hate to do like the body language analysis thing. Just kidding. No, I don't. I love doing it. But he looks worried. Like, he genuinely, like, oftentimes just looks like a little bit nervous to be in the game, which, you know, I mean, don't really love seeing that.
Which is funny, because Spo's fond of saying Chicago guys are built differently, which is what, you know, he's obviously referring to Dwayne. But, you know, it's just such an interesting thing, because that was the whole idea, that Kendrick Nunn was a tough, you know, son of a bitch, and he just could hang with anybody and compete, even, I mean, despite everything that happened, as far as not getting drafted or whatever, which is a whole other story that we don't want to get into now during the finals. But aside from all that, it's like, it's just, I don't know that he's necessarily shaky or scared. I think he's a little hesitant because he keeps getting a lot of foul calls also, but it's mostly because he's just not in the right place at the right time. I think, he's not moving as well as he should. And that's been a problem all year long. He was never a great defender, but it never really mattered during the more relaxed regular season. But now, when everything is so intense, it's just being exposed so much more there. So it is absolutely problematic.
Yeah. And I think you can kind of take it back to the Jimmy thing too, where, you know, he went from learning to make plays to now, like, one of his point guards has rendered himself essentially useless to make decisions, and the other one is injured. This is a huge learning curve for him, you know, like, a lot of these decisions that he isn't making, like, I think he definitely left, like, I think he was aggressive, but I think he definitely left a lot of points on the board. And I think a lot of that just has to do with the fact that, like, he is now initiating so much. And I know Tyler Hero is also initiating some stuff, and we can talk about that later. I think it's been funny to kind of watch him. He's like wing Russell Westbrook right now, where I'm just like, no. It's very interesting to watch. I mean, I love the confidence and all that stuff.
We'll talk more about Jimmy Butler, Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, and Miami's chances in the NBA Finals next. I'm here with Sirit Sohi, and you're listening to Locked On Heat. Continue to get my coverage of the NBA Finals. Make sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, and always get the latest episodes by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. Here's part two of my conversation with Sirit Sohi of Yahoo Sports about Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, and the rest of the NBA Finals.
But
it's ridiculous. I keep mentioning this to anybody who's not familiar with the whole Tyler experience, like, covering a game at the American Airlines Arena to see 18,000 fans live and die with each shot. I've mentioned it 100 times before, but it's so interesting to me. I've never seen anything like it. No matter what player has been in that arena, nobody has ever kind of had the same mutual gasping of breath every time Tyler does something. And it's very, very unusual for a young rookie like him to have that kind of cultish following, but yet here we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there's a number of reasons probably why he gets more attention than a lot of other rookies, but yeah, I think for a lot of people that were, like, tuning into Tyler Hero for the first time, there's an assumption that it's just kind of been, like, an upward track for him. And he's had, like, you know, he's had some struggles for sure in the regular season and the playoffs. Like, he's coming into his own as a decision maker. And there were definitely some times in game four. Like, I think the one I remember most specifically was just taking this horrible, like, baseline mid-range off the dribble fadeaway. I was like, why are you doing that? Yeah. He's still figuring a lot of it out. And I think, like, same goes for Jimmy too. Like, this is all, like, it's his first year with his team, and they're all kind of coming into their own, alongside him as well. Like, you look at even Duncan Robinson, right? Like, that, this frustrates the hell out of me, because I love Duncan Robinson, and I think that, like, he should just be pulling up all the time. When he passes out of shots, I'm just like, what are you doing, man?
You just throw back.
What?
You and Spo both. Like, Spo.
I know.
A lot more colorfully yelling at Duncan to shoot the effing ball. So, yeah.
Yeah, I just want to like duck into more positive affirmations. Like, honestly, if he had the, and I love, oh man, I love that Ramona Shelbourne story on Duncan and her his relationship with Spo. I thought that was one of the best stories of the year, and I think it's just so cool, like watching him grow and have more confidence and figure out how to become an NBA player when like the guy wanted to work for the Ringer, which
so hilarious to see that. Yeah, yeah,
I love his story, but you know, like you've seen some of that the bad side of that come out with some of the shots that he's passed up. I tweeted the other day, like basically, and I think some Warriors fans got mad at me, but you know. Like,
oh yeah, Klay Thompson
did not.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like if Duncan Robinson had Tyler Hero's confidence, he'd be like a young Klay Thompson. And people got mad because Duncan doesn't play as good defense as Klay, but Klay didn't play a lot of defense early in his career either. Yeah. And also, like Duncan Robinson is not as bad of a defender as I think. You think made out to be?
You know, I saw this during the Celtics series. I don't know if you were watching that one as close. I think you were covering that one pretty. I recall you writing something about Bam during that series, but like Marcus Smart had like a personal vendetta against Duncan Robinson for whatever reason. Like he was going at him so intently. Like whenever he got that switch onto Duncan, he just decided to go at him. And you know, we heard this from the JJ Redick podcast. There's obviously an issue with like, oh, let's go out to white boy because it's like an almost insulting for some players. I totally get that, but at the same time, like you're right though. Like Duncan, I think he actually made progress during the Celtics series. He's been good. He's got the length and the physical tools. It's just, you know, sometimes he's not always be able to tie it all together. And to your point too, and considering his journey, it's like this guy probably did not expect to be at this level in the NBA finals, expected to play high level defense. You know, it's kind of just like he got here because he's a shooter first and foremost. And it's just, I think it's always going to be a weaker part of his overall game for sure.
But I think it's impressive how quickly he's improved over the course of the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think like JVG has been singing his praises on this front, so we don't have to get into it too much. But you know, just even within the Celtics series, I think the Celtics kind of ran into problems, not necessary problems, but you know, putting Tatum on Duncan and going out of their way to like the Heat do a good job, I think, of trying to hide him and not give in to that matchup, and you know that kind of reared its head again in game four as well when they tried to get LeBron on him. But you know, wasting all this time to try to get a matchup of Tatum on Robinson, I think after Robinson had a few possessions on Tatum, he'd sort of started to figure out a few things. I don't remember the specifics of it anymore. I'm like, you know, I don't have the LeBron James photographic memory, as I'm sure.
Damn.
I think 1% of the world does, but he started to figure some things out against Tatum, which, you know, it's a little bit harder now that the Heat are playing. Like they pretty much have, I think, abandoned their zone at this point, which seems like the right move. But yeah, like, you know, there's a huge learning curve from trying to figure out a few possessions against Jason Tatum to now LeBron James is trying to find a way to isolate against you.
To make any
mistakes in your coverage.
As far as Duncan's concerned, you know, like, have you seen specifically what it is, why he's been struggling early in the season? Because I mean, early in the series, because I can't quite figure it out. I've made the point that I think the Lakers' overall wing length has been problematic. They've tried to stick with him, but he keeps passing up those shots that you pointed out. But even when he gets those shots, it almost feels like he's struggling to get his release as quickly as he did earlier in the season. And I wonder if you may have noticed something for the sake of my listeners.
Well, I would say first and foremost, it's definitely taking those shots. I think the biggest thing though is just the fact that it's Anthony Davis, really. Like he can switch onto those right away and contest him. And I think that that's made him not take some of those shots. And also some of them, to be honest though, like, what are his percentages right now? Because I feel like when he shoots, like, he's not missing a lot of shots. In fact, I think I've seen him miss some open shots as opposed to like the ones that are like coming off of screens and stuff. I think he should, like, maybe one of the next developments for him should just be like the idea that, you know, he's got to think of himself as one of those guys. And going back to the Klay Thompson thing, like that once he gets his feet set, the shot is probably good. And I think that's probably next in his evolution, both as just like a, like on a mental level and a physical level. Mm-hmm. But I think they've just done a really good job with the screen, but I think that they can also do a little bit more, to find ways to target him. I think it's interesting. I think the Heat have gone away from some things. The biggest being like, you know, I think having Bam back in the game in game four, you saw the impact of that right away in the first. And I know that, you know, one of his guys is Goran and they're trying to turn Tyler into a playmaker, but it feels, I mean, I haven't checked the numbers on this and I don't know, you can really, but it feels like they're going away from the Duncan dribble handoffs.
Yeah. Well, without Bam there for those 2.5 games, I think that was a big part of why it was missing. Like they keep trying to get him going. And then to that same point, like with Bam back in the lineup in game four, Duncan has his best game of the series where he winds up contributing 17 points and surprisingly getting to the line 6 times. So I think it's there's certainly that chemistry mm-hmm. there between him and Bam. I think Michael Pina wrote about that for 538 about the danger of that dribble handoff and how effective it's been. And
I think the other thing is that, you know, I would probably, especially if AD is going to continue to guard Jimmy, which is probably the most important adjustment of the series to this point. I think if he's going to continue to guard him and they're going to go under, like, yeah, it makes it a little bit difficult to run a pick and roll with Duncan, but they can get open on dribble handoffs far more easily. Especially like if you send like a screen before the screen and just give him a little bit more separation, it just makes a little bit more difficult for a guy like AD to recover to that. And then maybe that leads to them not going under on these Jimmy screens, which then like reopens their offense. And I think the other thing is that like, it's interesting. Like, you know, I think he should just shoot him. I think he should just shoot. Like he's such a fantastic shooter. And like, I think you just live and die with that. Right. And
I don't know, like with him, like, it's like it feels like he's so, his confidence hangs on every shot, which is why they go to him so early on in games. Mm-hmm. Like they always run that set right away so that he can get a shot off early, and if it falls, chances are he's feeling the groove a little bit and he starts being a little bit more confident. So I wonder if they're like they're hesitant to go to it so quickly, knowing that maybe it could shake his confidence to the point where he's a non-factor. Like he was in game one where he didn't score at all. I mean, is he so vital and has been for most of the season, such a vital part of Miami's offense. So I wonder if there's something to it.
Maybe. Yeah. What I was going to say though, is that like, you know, I think if you go to those DHOs and they decide to, I think what, like one of the things I saw them do was they got, when Duncan started to get a little too open, they trapped a little bit, and that's a little bit difficult when it's Jimmy because you can have him spot up for three, but you know, that's not ideal. But you know, passing to an open Jimmy Butler is never a bad idea. And I think, you know, the positive of the way that Duncan plays sometimes is that you do trust him to like make the right pass out of those situations. Like he's kind of developing that, like the off screen, sort of like you know how Ray Allen used to just like hit KG right away. I've been watching old Celtics stuff first thing I'm working on, but like Ray Allen used to hit KG when he came off those screens, and it would be like a layup or a dunk every time. Like I think Duncan has that capability.
Yeah, I could see that. I had not been rewatching old Celtics footage as closely, but I could see from recollection there. But look,
why not?
Oh yeah, I know.
Obviously, what you should be watching right now.
In the midst of the NBA Finals, you're absolutely right. Has Miami season been a success? Sierra and I debate that in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. You can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Anyway, I'll be continuing to cover the rest of the NBA Finals as well as the Miami Heat offseason. Here is part three of my conversation with Sirit Sohi. Well, both you and I were on that Zoom call earlier today. We're recording this on Thursday afternoon, and earlier Jimmy Butler said, "Ain't no one going home yet." Something to that effect. They seem confident. What are your thoughts about that? Because it's so. I know personally, I feel like they have a chance of at least winning another game, and I also think they. I mean, they could push the series to 7 games. It would be very, very unlikely, perhaps. But I'm curious as to your perspective on this.
I think they could. The most interesting press conference to me was Spoelstra's, because he's just so. He was very defiant. He was like pissed off, you know?
Yeah.
It was interesting because he was kind of saying like, he said, we don't give an SHIT.
Well, because he said it before, a couple of press conferences before, he says, we don't give it. Yeah. I think it was after game one. I think he said, we don't give a shit what everyone else thinks.
And yeah. I wonder who told him that he shouldn't swear. That
NBA PR, Mark Brassard was standing over his shoulder, yelling at him and telling him, no, you can't say that. So especially right after a finals game, I'm sure it was probably not well received.
Yeah, probably not. I think the NBA TV producers are probably like, no!
Yeah. How do you bleep out a Zoom call?
Yeah. They probably didn't think they'd have to do that for a Spoelstra press conference.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, I just, like, as I'm sure you know, I love the Heat. I hate that we just mock everything now. And, like, we can't, like, take anything just at face value, especially when it comes to this type of stuff. I was actually talking to a friend yesterday about how I'm just like, I love self-help stuff. And I feel like you're not supposed to say that. And I love how earnestly the Heat believe in themselves. Like, Spoelstra often just sounds like, you know, he sounds like Tony Robbins, but like more authentic, you know, like obviously like, I don't think Spoelstra will ever stop coaching, if he ever wanted to, he could totally like transition into like a YouTube life coach and like make millions of dollars doing that. I think he'd be great at that. But I really do think that they have.
Do you have a favorite Spoism? I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's just like, I know Heat fans love all of his favorite expressions. I'm not sure if you follow them closely enough to have a favorite Spoism.
Favorite Spoism, like, I know he's got, it's funny actually. When I interviewed Riley for the Jimmy story, he kind of pushed back against like the "we're not for everybody" thing.
Yes.
And I was like, you know, it's your head coach that says that all the time, right?
All the time.
Well, I understand that, but I think I get where he's coming from, because I think that the idea that the Heat culture is draconian is something that is worth pushing back against. There are definitely expectations that come with it. Of how hard you need to work, but I think that they've also, you know, they've taken a lot of reclamation projects on. I think they believe a lot in just the ability of self-belief and hard work to get you to a place where you thought you wouldn't be able to go. And you've seen that in a lot of the guys that they've taken on. So I think that, you know, Riley was kind of pushing back against it in the sense that, you know, it's not like we only go after one type of player. Like we find a way to make people fit. And I think that's true. And I think, like, I mean, Jimmy is the perfect example of that in terms of a guy that's willing to work really hard, but you do have to make room for some of his idiosyncrasies. Mm-hmm. I think that they go out of their way to try to understand people. So yeah, the "we're not for everybody" one is interesting to me, but I actually, like, I have a bulletin board, like in my office where I like try to put, I just like put quotes that I like and that I hear. The two that I put of Spo throughout this playoff series has been "review it, own it, get better." I just love that because it's, I think it's just about like having, you know, he's like, I was reading some old Spo profiles and like he's read Mindset and I think Carolyn Dweck. And like the whole idea is that like you aren't your failures. Your failures are something like mathematical that you can study and then and work at it from there.
You do love the self-help stuff, don't you?
Oh yeah, like I said earlier, I love self-help. So I think makes me a big fan of Spo. And the other one that I put up was, I'm looking for, oh yeah, the Tyler Hero thing that he said, everyone overestimates weight. You can do in a day and they underestimate what you can do in the course of a few months or a year.
So I think
the thing with the Heat is they do have an inordinate amount of self-belief, even when they are in positions where they where a lot of other people would think that they're going to fail, there's been like a pretty solid chunk of examples of that. Probably the strongest one was when they were 11-30 and then almost made the playoffs the year that they had Dion Waiters. That was the year that we talked. That was the year that I profiled
him. He was rewarded. He was rewarded with a big contract.
He was rewarded very nicely. We don't talk about that.
Hey, I've been
anything.
I am Dion's staunchest supporter on this podcast, much to a lot of people's disappointment. he was being reviled. I talked to people who know Dion, and the things that they were mentioning about him and his fit in the team and how the team treated him the way they did, not great. So I don't want to rehash that now in the midst of everybody being positive about the NBA Finals and everything else. But it was not a good season for Dion, that's for sure.
Yeah, fair enough. I think these guys do have a chance, because I think if there's any team that, you know, when you're in a situation like that, like a lot of it is like you can't fight yourself, right? And I don't think they'll fight themselves. I don't think that they are coming into this thinking that they're going to lose. I think they will win tomorrow. I don't know about game 6 or 7, but I do have a pretty strong feeling that they will tomorrow. I think having 2 days off and you know, I think Bam will come out and have a stronger game. You know how he gets when he loses as well. So, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know that. I think the Lakers are really talented. And I think the one thing that is going to be the biggest problem that they have is that, like, you know, when you want to win with effort, it kind of requires that the other team lets up a little bit. And I think that LeBron knows what he's dealing with in the Heat and Spoelstra. And I think that will allow them to, you know, be ready for it. And I think that ultimately will be like one of the reasons that the Heat probably won't pull off a big comeback. But, you know, these guys, it's not like when we talk about Heat culture and, you know, just how hard these guys work, like they are up against a team that also works incredibly hard and hustles and is playing incredible defenses and is like highly like smart, communicates with each other. And really just doesn't make consistent mistakes. Like the Lakers, I think because they have LeBron, Rondo, AD, and Vogel, and like a bunch of smart people on the sidelines that like see things very quickly. I don't think that this is a team that really struggles with in-game adjustments and that allows them to self-correct really well. And I think that ultimately will just like prevent the Heat from being able to take full advantage of basically, like, I guess, you know, how hard they're willing to hustle and how focused they are on offense when they're really like firing at all cylinders.
Yeah. A question I keep thinking about, and I know it's not an original one, but at least it's something that I've been kind of especially thinking about in terms of the series going the way it has. But has this, in your opinion, been a successful season for Miami, all things considered?
Oh, of course. I mean, there were people who didn't think they were going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they ever did that. Like, I've been talking to Anthony Irwin, the host of Locked On Lakers, and I think that kind of shows the way some people have thought about this team, that maybe they weren't considered a legitimate playoff team. But internally, and maybe that's to your point, as you were talking about before, their belief was always that they were a contender. And I think that was made even more concrete by the acquisition of Jay Crowder and Andre Iguodala. Those are the moves that kind of say, you know what, we have the potential of going up against the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals. And in order to combat those, we're going to get two long, solid wing defenders with great experience, and especially in Iguodala, you know, a person with championship experience to help guide this young team. So I don't know.
So this is interesting. Like, I think this is actually something I've been trying to suss out a little bit myself. And I think definitely to your point, by then, yes, like something had shifted and they believed that they could, you know, make a really deep run. I don't know how deep they thought at that point, but yeah, when you make a move like that, like you are, you know, you're banking on the now and as opposed to the future. So like that is a pretty clear sense that they believe in themselves, right? And I think it was Myers or Kelly. I think it was, you know, one of the white shooting centers said. I think it was Myers. Myers said something along the lines of, you know, there was a moment in training camp with Spo where he said, I don't want to wait. Like he was looking around and at what he had on the team and just said, like, you know, we can do this. I don't know if that's something Spo says every training camp. Maybe it is, just given, you know, Spo. But I was going back. So there's that, right? And that's training camp. And I was going back to my conversation with Riley on the Jimmy piece that I did in December, just about how they recruited him. And we talked the day before opening night for the regular season. And what he said to me was essentially, and I don't think I've ever written this. I just don't think it made the piece, but he essentially said that, you know, he talks to Jimmy and he's very clear on, like, you know, he wants Jimmy to win a championship here and that's what they want to build towards, and that, you know, they want to get another guy, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, for the team president to be saying that the day before opening tip suggests that they probably felt at that point that they didn't have enough.
That's fair.
So I don't know. I don't know where exactly they stood. And I think that would be right, because at that point, you don't know. I mean, you know, Nunn has now shifted back.
No, you're, yeah. I mean, you're right.
You don't know that Kendrick Nunn is going to be a thing. You don't
know
that
Duncan's going to have historic shooting.
Exactly.
A lot of things had to break.
Like, Bam Adebayo, you know, like, yeah. You know that Bam Adebayo is going to emerge as the best player on the team. Like, a lot of those things developed during the season. So, you know, just based on Riley saying that, I would assume that, you know, they did think that they had to get a little bit more to be able to compete on that level. But at the same time, it's not something I pressed him on. So I don't know if, and, you know, maybe it is in a transcript. I don't know if he wanted, like, another star, or if the type of deal that they made for Iggy and Crowder is what he had in mind in terms of what extra they needed.
Was it a face-to-face with Riles?
No, I wish.
Oh, okay. Okay, I was curious. No,
we talked on the phone. I was actually in Edmonton at the time. Yeah, we talked on the phone. I didn't make a trip to Miami for that story.
You talked to him. Didn't you talk to him for Dion, the piece that you wrote?
I did, yes.
Okay, yeah, and that was a face-to-face.
That was the first time I met him. And it was, I think I just graduated college. It was like the coolest moment in my life at the time. Like, yeah. Yes. This is Riley and his loafers in Coral Gables or wherever they did their training camp. Some beautiful campus.
Wow, a couple of years ago. I'm trying to recall. I don't remember. Oh, I think, was it a high school?
It was either a beautiful high school or a college campus, like probably an hour north of Miami.
Oh, I think it was an FAU, I want to say.
Yeah, it was. It was an FAU.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's Wow, that feels like an eternity ago.
Yeah, traveling. Yeah. What a concept.
So one last question before I let you go. You know, this was kind of, again, made more concrete, I think, recently by Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer. You recently wrote that Miami had already won despite whatever happens in the finals, and that they are poised to build a contender for years to come. Do you see it the same way?
Of course.
Yeah.
I just don't know. Like, the only thing that you have to, like, worry about in terms of timeline is that, you know, Jimmy is going to start aging, but that's it.
Is there a co-star or a you know, and perhaps even a better player than Jimmy that you think would be an immediate impact player or great fit? Because so much of what Miami's done is based on everybody kind of fitting well and meshing and mm-hmm. just finding everybody to step up. But who's the right player? Because you can, I mean, I think it's obvious that Giannis fits the bill, but then you're people talking about Bradley Beal or Victor Oladipo, who's often linked to Miami. Mm-hmm. But do you see any one player at a superstar level who you could immediately plug in and make this team a contender for years to come?
I think Oladipo would be the perfect fit in Miami. I think, you know, just even seeing in this series, if there's one thing that they are lacking and will continue to lack is, you know, we'll see how Goran recovers from this injury, but he was starting to get older anyways, is that they yeah. need like a downhill quick guy that can penetrate. You look at like the AD matchup, that's the one thing, you know, like, and we didn't really talk about this, but, you know, if Goran was playing, it wouldn't have been as easy to just put AD on the perimeter like that with Jimmy. Like, you could just run a pick and roll and have Goran on him, and still, like, you know, AD's gonna figure it out, but it's a couple of possessions that you can buy of him having to sort of figure out that matchup with him. But yeah, I think Victor just is a perfect fit in that sense. He's super quick. Like, he can get him going in transition. he's an amazing pick and roll player. I would love to see him, like, you know, when a team that's like that's spread out the way that they are. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, like obviously Giannis is Giannis, and Bradley Beal would be great too, but I don't know that he necessarily like serves a function that they are missing, you know, like obviously having a secondary playmaker like him and somebody who can shoot like him is always good, but the Heat have plenty of shooting, right? They need more probably creation.
That's a fair point. Yeah, I think that's the next evolutionary step for Tyler Hero too. I know you mentioned him earlier that you kind of wanted to get into Tyler a little bit. I know we talked about that, but any lasting thoughts on Tyler Hero, at least as far as his impact in the series or anything bigger than that?
I feel like I need more time to really like bake the Tyler Hero take, you know, because it's just like every day it kind of changes a little bit. It's interesting to watch right now. It's fun to watch. And like, above all else, like I just think it's good to have that level of self-belief in yourself.
Yeah, I'll never have it, that's for sure.
Yeah, me neither. That's why I have to read all this shit.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're busy with the NBA finals. You're going to be continuing to cover the finals and I guess the NBA offseason for Yahoo Sports. If you're not following Siret and her incredible work, you're doing yourself a disservice. She's one of the best writers out there and always a great person to talk to. Again, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to our conversation. Hopefully you enjoyed it. I'll be, of course, recapping Game 5 of the NBA Finals Friday night. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support.